always arriving, always becoming. I think that's what our lives, what existence, all about. From the beginning of time, when the first Pithecanthropus erectus stumbled from the cave, stumbling probably on his name that he couldn't pronounce, we human beings have been asking the great existential questions. What are we doing here? And what does it all mean? Is the meaning of life inherent, given, essential, as the essentialist theologians would say? Or is it existential? Do we create it? Is life otherwise just absurd until we get off of our behinds and start doing something? Now, most of the time, this is the point in the sermon where I would do the cheap joke about at these prices you can't expect answers to the great philosophical, religious, existential questions of life. But today's an exception. I'm going to give you an answer. It's one that I believe right now, but might not tomorrow, and you don't have to accept, but I will be giving you an answer. And that is that life, and that great question about whether meaning is essential or life is absurd, is like light. Is light a wave or is it a particle? Well, it turns out, as far as we know, it's both, and it's called a wavicle. I didn't make up that word. It's not my laugh, but I do understand it. Life is both absurd and just pregnant with meaning in every moment. Whether we create it or uncover it, I don't think is a terribly important distinction. As long as we confess and are inspired by the fact that what we do, what we choose, how we are in this world makes it visible to each other. Our lives get meaning and from moment to moment in what we do, in the enthusiasm with which we do it, in the light that is in our eyes when we are fully engaged with each other and with life. But the other part of that, and the part that so many people talk about, which renders life to them seemingly absurd, is death. You know, there's a very popular reading right now that's done by almost every denomination I know, including Unitarian Universalists, that say life is a journey and death is a destination. And I don't want to kind of sully an otherwise beautiful spring day by talking about our mortality, but our mortality is an important part of our lives. The idea of arriving, the idea of approaching, might seem inherently depressing. The idea of an end, or if you believe in another door at the end of this one, still, almost nobody is eager to go through that door, and that's because we value the light. We value these moments. We see the preciousness of them. And one of the good things about aging, and we were talking about this the other night with some friends, one of whom had celebrated one of those birthdays, and this is one of those birthdays that didn't have a zero on it. It had a 5. 75, all right, I'll confess what it was, and was just feeling old, and that whole idea was, well, you see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's a train, and you're facing it, but as someone said, that the prospect of being hanged in the morning concentrates the mind wonderfully, when we consider our mortality, it's a nice reminder of how precious these days are, how precious every breath, every heartbeat, every sunrise, every sunset, every moment that we get to share together is. It's a reminder that there is not world enough and time enough, but there's a very good reason to appreciate this day, to be up and to enjoy each other, to embrace life and love and all of those things that give meaning to these moments. Is our life a question of moment to moment without continuity? Is the meaning of our life the legacy of what we build, of what remains permanent? Well, nothing really remains permanent. Read Shakespeare's sonnets, neither marble nor the gilded monuments of men. Everything erodes, but it doesn't make nonsense out of our efforts today. I had a conversation this week with someone. It was about a man that we both knew who was a restaurateur who had built a chain of restaurants. And when he retired, that chain fell apart. And the restaurants will probably go out of business. Doesn't render his life absurd. The meaning of a legacy isn't necessarily in how long it lasts. Those are nice things, but it's in the moments that he was building it, that he was worried, that he was engaged, that he was planning, that his eyes and his heart were filled with a sense of enthusiasm. We climb mountains, and then we have to come down from the mountains. We climb mountains not simply to reach the summit, though it's always nice to do that, but it's not about the summit. A helicopter placing you on the summit will give you a nice view. But the climb to the summit is why people climb. Yes, accomplishments are great. I like accomplishments. Failures are not nearly as much fun as accomplishments. Tragically, personally, I learn more from my failures than my accomplishments, but I like the accomplishments better. But I need both of them for the joy of the engagement and for the learning of what can I do better, what can I do differently, what is there to extract from this experience. That's where and how I think that we lead our lives, in the engagement, in what Goethe said, immer streben, always striving to do something. Not because it's permanent, but because it engages us. It involves our heads, our hearts, our feet, our hands, in order to build something and do something. The repetition might seem absurd. So we're just doing this and we're going to have to do it again. Oh, what an absurd cycle this is. How can it possibly be meaningful? How many of you took showers this morning? Okay. You know you're going to get dirty again. What an absurdity. Why did you bother showering? Well, it felt good, and it felt good to be clean in that moment, and maybe it's going to feel good to be out there sweating while you're walking the crop walk, and then it will feel good to be in a shower again. That's life. That's life and the cycles that we have of inspiration, of perspiration, of enthusiasm, of despair, of joy, and of sorrow. That's what we do while the light shines. And if we're lucky, we find something to do that engages us, something, someone to love, that expands our hearts, that makes us quiver and sweat and fear and hope and have all of the emotions that human beings can have, all of the joys and all of the sorrows, all the fear of loss, all the hysteria. They're all part of the human condition. I know that Marx, Karl, not Groucho, but Groucho probably would have agreed, said that religion was the opiate of the masses. And he meant that not in a good sense, but opiates are important. If you're really hurting, you need an opiate. So sometimes being together and having friends hold you is an opiate. Use it. Don't abuse it. Sometimes we try to block feeling, and religion is used so that we don't value this life. The meaning of life is in the next life, in an afterlife, and this life is absurd if there is no divine court that is going to give all of us not justice. Saints want justice, the rest want mercy, but that the that life is rendered absurd if that doesn't happen, and religion is used as a drug to numb us to the pain of the world, to the anxieties in the world. That's a misuse. Religion should remind us that we are together in this, that what we do and choose and how we come together informs this moment and informs our life. It's not necessarily permanent. We all go through life and changes. It's not about an arrival, but it's about arriving. It's about both being and becoming. A lot of people look at life and say, well, how do I measure it? Do I measure it in just individual moments, or is it the totality? And the answer, again, is it's both. I have the either good fortune or not of driving past my elementary school this week. And I remember that kid playing handball against the wall of the temporary bungalow that was put up during the Korean War. I got to look at that wall again because the temporary bungalow is still there. So much for the permanent and the transient in life. Helene and I were down in Venice having a drink at a cafe, and as I watched people go back and forth, and I was sitting there drinking a nice red wine, and I was wearing a coat, I was remembering Venice of my childhood and of my young adulthood. And I am the same person, and I'm a very different person. And I'm looking at these young people, and I'm looking at myself, and I'm going, how did this happen? And I'm just also filled with joy that I've had Helene on this long, strange, and wonderful trip in the Venice of my youth, in the Venice of my middle age, and in the Venice of whatever this is. And it's good to have company and to grow and to be the same and to be different and to feel the continuity and the discontinuity, to understand that we live our lives in these moments and with continuity. And there is meaning to the lives that we live and to the efforts that we make, and that nothing is permanent, and that makes it more precious. It's true of nations. It's true of organizations such as ours. As an American, I look at our history and I see all of our successes and our triumphs, and I see the blots and the blemishes and the moral blindness. At this anniversary of the Rodney King riots, I know our great societal failures, our color not blindness, and the not blindness of justice and of injustice. And I look at that and I own it as part of my history, and I also see the progress, and I also know that there is no arrival. There is only a journey and an arriving, that we have not become a perfect nation. We have not become perfect communities. We have not become perfect people, but we are being and becoming and arriving, but not having arrived. The same thing is true in my final category for this congregation. This congregation, within the larger framework of Unitarian Universalism, has a history. It began many years ago, splitting off as Unitarian Universalist congregations do, kind of like amoebas. We split, there's a little mitosis that goes on, and this congregation grew, and it shrank, and it grew, and it was challenged, and it chose life, and it chose growth. This congregation is its founders. This congregation is all of the clergy who has served, who have served part-time and full-time, and helped us become who we are. It's everyone in this room and everyone who was in the room before us who made this possible. We have grown from a congregation, while I have known you but not served you, that met in a bank community room, that met at a Montessori school, that met downstairs here with about 12 people, that came upstairs to the social hall and then had to make that scary journey, almost an exodus, all the way into a, brace yourselves, sanctuary. We did it. And we do a pretty good job of getting the pews filled and growing our programs, and we enjoy almost every moment of that. Like the cells in the human body, there is growth, there is linking together, there's also death, there's also replacement, and an organicity to who we are. The power that we have as individuals to make a difference in each other's lives is enormous. The power we have to create and uncover meaning in each other's lives, and by doing that, grow meaning in ourselves. The power that we have to take each other when our lights really feel like particles and put us together into a wave is enormous. What's the inherent meaning of life? Is it absurd? Is it meaningful? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. That as long as we live, we are becoming. When we stop becoming, when we have the illusion we have arrived, this is the end. I own the meaning of life. I've put it into plastic and put it on my mantelpiece. That is when we reach that ultimate destination. But while we live, we change. We grow. We retrench. We link up, and we choose to grow and change again and again and again. Comforted by the patterns that are repeated in our lives and excited by the challenges that we still have to not beat but engage, because it is in the engagement as it is in the climbing of the mountain that we are fully present in this moment, in this life, with each other, and with life itself.